Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're using the story of the release of Sergeant Bergdahl from Afghanistan. The negotiations with the Taliban, really, to review the whole sad affair of America's invasion of Afghanistan, and further demonstrating that Bergdahl wanted to leave the U.S. military. He tweeted this weekend, the weekend before he disappeared, according to one of his closest comrades there in Afghanistan, that if deployment is lame, I'm going to get lost in the mountains and make my way to China. So if deployment, you know, when you're in the Army, you don't get to choose where you go. The Army chooses your mission and where you go. So it's called a deployment. So if the deployment is lame, I'm going to get lost in the mountains and make my way to China. And another one of his comrades said, this is Leatherman, told CNN, that Bergdahl always looked at the mountains in the distance and talked about seeing what's on the other side. He simply walked off. So the reality is he didn't want to be part of it anymore. He just wanted to leave. Now, under those circumstances, you'd say, okay, I don't want to be here anymore. Now, the problem is in the military, it's a whole command and control regimen without free will, so you can't have people leave. Not and run it the way that the military is run, where people don't make moral decisions. They don't evaluate the information and make choices. No, you're deployed. You're told where to go, when to go, what to do when you get there. And if you don't play along, well, they'll imprison you. And in this particular case, they hunted him down, but they didn't get him. After losing five more American lives, they failed in the mission to recapture him. And so why now would you trade him for Taliban officers? I mean, the five guys that were released, I mean, it's a Taliban dream team. Why would you trade this American who deliberately, on his own accord, walked away for that?
That's easy.
Go ahead.
Well, it's very simple. If things get too quiet so as to justify the pulling out of American troops, well, that's not good if you want to keep troops there. So if you plant several more rabble-rousers back within the culture and they can, you know, start killing people again and making trouble, well, then you have a reason to stay. So, you know, by getting Bergdahl back and planting these guys in there, you kind of ensure that a little more chaos is going to ensue, and then you have a justification for remaining.
Yeah, that's actually what I don't think is the actual reason. Plausible.
Okay.
It's plausible. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think that there is another reason.
I don't think Bergdahl was hemorrhaging information because I don't think he had that much information.
Oh, no, he was not. No, that's not the reason. Yeah, no, he had no information.
Sounds like he saw Rambo one time too many. You know, Rambo walking off into the jungles of, you know, how will you live, John, day by day? Heading off to the mountains, you know.
According to the Taliban, they found him drunk under some bush someplace, and that the Taliban said, he had a fine time with us. He loved green tea. We gave him green tea. He liked vegetables more than meat, so we gave him vegetables, and he wanted meat a couple of times a week. We gave him meat a couple of times a week. He loved to play badminton, so he taught us all how to play badminton. We played badminton with him. He learned the local dialect and became quite fluent. They traded religious ideas. He celebrated Christmas and Easter, and he considered their religious, considered Islamic traditions. And they had a grand old time together.
So that's just Club Med Afghanistan.
Club Med Afghanistan. In fact, the pictures of him, he's in casual Afghani attire. He's actually not in Afghanistan. He has been in Pakistan.
Okay.
This whole time. I'm sure that his mom and dad want him back. And I'm sure that he probably got tired of playing badminton with his limited wardrobe. But he was not a prisoner of war in any reasonable sense.
Okay, well, two things. Number one, for you to finish why they wanted him back. But also,
I didn't answer that.
But before we do that, I have one other question.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything about which this guy was not naive? He was naive about entering the military service. He was naive about marching off the base. Did this kid have any sort of worldview premises that were realistic?
You know, they're intelligence level. And by the way, this man did appear to have a conscience, so he understood what was going on, so I don't want to diminish that aspect of it.
But he was naive.
But it's easy to be naive in a culture that promotes political correctness and promotes propaganda, selling those who march off to war as heroes. And so it's very easy to be in that situation. I actually credit him in the sense of he exercised good judgment. Now, this is the reason the administration negotiated his release. It had nothing to do with him. He was irrelevant to the whole picture. And by the way, what I'm going to say now happens to be the administration's own appraisal of why they negotiated his release.
Okay.
Having nothing to do with him. Having entirely to do that the United States began this project to leave Afghanistan with some semblance of honor and dignity, and began with Clinton and Obama this idea that, you know, anything, any straw that we can hold up and say, see, we completed the job, was going to be sufficient. So they came up with this idea of, Hillary has affirmed this, that the idea was if we could just get the Taliban to renounce international terrorism and Al-Qaeda, that would be the goal in itself, and that would be considered sufficient. Hillary has admitted that. That was their goal. So all you need is the Taliban to say, we're no longer eating monkey brains while drinking a fine Chianti. So that was it. But the problem was that the Taliban said no, that we don't want to negotiate to the terms of the American withdrawal. We don't want to. And so we were having these negotiations with the Taliban in Qatar. And the Taliban finally said, it's not in our interest for you to leave. We don't want to negotiate your departure, even if all we have to say is no more monkey brains. We don't want you to leave. And so the United States was frustrated. They didn't understand why they wouldn't, just admit to this one small request and then that we would leave and they could have their country back. And it's because, they don't want us to leave. So so Bergdahl had nothing to do with it, except he was the only, quote-unquote, prisoner of war. Now, he's not a prisoner of war. He's actually a hostage. And the thing that Obama wants to do is he wants to close down Gitmo. And so he was looking for, and they admitted it, they were looking for a way to reengage the Taliban in discussions. And so the Taliban said, we're interested in a hostage exchange. The Taliban came to the White House and said, through Qatar, and said, we have a hostage. We'll give you the hostage. Here are the detainees that we want in return. And the administration, knowing they wanted to close down Gitmo anyway, the administration now saw it as an opportunity to reengage the Taliban in discussions, because they were asking so little that they felt for sure if they could engage them in discussion, the Taliban would agree, and America could leave Afghanistan with honor. And so,
right.
but the Taliban said immediately that, well, we will negotiate the hostage exchange. We will not negotiate the peace. And so the administration, even though they went into this naively hoping the Taliban would change their mind, and in the middle of the hostage negotiation, they would open up the broader picture of, well, you renounced monkey brains, and then we can have peace with honor and leave. That was why they did it.
But okay, now there's another flying ointment there. If the Taliban gains ascendancy in Afghanistan again, and they decide to put a torch to the opium fields, you know, that's intolerable, because, I mean, opium is a wonderful subverter of cultures, you know, just
it is.
China. And then plus the Part B Pharma probably wants it too as well.
Yeah, now you're talking about a conspiracy theorist, but in this particular argument, it's impossible to argue with you, because if you look at America's most recent last 50 years worth of engagements internationally, drugs almost always seem to flow from where America goes.
Yeah. So it's like, we have to make sure the Taliban doesn't, torch the poppies and have them start growing watercress or something.
We're not willing to make that part of our public disclosure. I did think that the fact that we didn't ask for any pretext of democracy, any pretext of religious freedom, any pretext of women's rights was extraordinarily telling of this administration. We just said denounce Al Qaeda, which they never, doesn't exist anymore.
So that's both of them?
Both of them, yes. And so that's the reason they did it, it didn't work. And it didn't work because we don't understand the mindset of the Taliban. The Taliban knows that they're in control of Afghanistan right now. And they know that there's no if, that America will leave, and that they will regain control of the Taliban even more adroitly when America leaves, and that there's nothing that will keep America there long term, and that there is no way that they will be deprived of taking back control of the country. And so it's a fait accompli, and between now, their fighters, their jihadists, can earn Mujahideen points with Allah. There is nothing whatsoever for them to gain by negotiating a truce with America. And the Obama administration doesn't seem to recognize that. We've got leadership of fools sacrificing American lives for nothing. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The story reads, he just walked off. He left his guard post. No one knows if he defected or if he's a traitor. What I do know, this was one of the soldiers reporting, is that he was there to protect us. Instead, he decided to defer from America and go and do his own thing. I don't know why he decided to do that. But we, it says spend, it might maybe meant to say spent, so much of our resources, and some of those resources were soldiers' lives. You notice he didn't say to rescue him. We spent resources, and some of those resources were soldiers' lives. He knows that the right line is capture him, because he went AWOL. He either defected or he was derelict in his duty. And so their goal was to capture him. He didn't want to say that, because that's the very thing that he has the non-disclosure agreement about, as to what the mission really was. On August 18, 2009, Staff Sergeant Clayton Bowen and PFC Morris Walker were killed by an IED in search for Bergdahl. Staff Sergeant Kurt Curtis was killed on August 26th. Second Lieutenant Darren Andrews, and PFC Matthew Michael Martinick were killed after being attacked in the Yahya Khalil district on September 4th. Staff Sergeant Michael Murphy was killed September 5th by an IED at the forward operating base in Sharana. All of these men died while trying to recapture Burqa. Moreover, other operations were put on hold while the search for Bergdahl was made a top priority, according to officers who lived in Afghanistan at that time. Manpower and assets, such as scarce surveillance drones and helicopters, were redirected to the hunt. Yeah, Bergdahl was the prey. The hunt. The lack of assets is one of the reasons the closure of a dangerous combat outpost, COP Keating, was delayed. So there was an outpost that it was dangerous, and the U.S. military knew it needed to be closed. It was too close to the Taliban, but they said, no, we have to delay that. Eight soldiers were killed at COP Keating before it was ultimately closed. So now you have 14 mothers and fathers. 14. Some of them with wives and some with children. That you need to go back and explain to them why their lives were expendable in this regard. The man wanted to leave. Why would you sacrifice 14 lives to recapture him? One soldier with the 509th Regiment, a sister unit of the 501st, told CNN that after Bergdahl disappeared, the U.S. Army essentially was told to lock down the entire province. He described sitting in the middle of a field with his platoon, vulnerable, with the capabilities and personnel mismanaged throughout the region. Different platoons ran out of water, food, and ammunition. You know, if they're mismanaged, if they're vulnerable throughout the region, whose fault is that? Two mortarmen, Private Aaron Fairbrain and PFC Justin Castillas, were killed in a July 4th, 2009 attack. It was unbelievable, the soldier said, all because of the selfish act of one person. The amount of anonymity towards him, animosity towards him, is nothing like you've ever seen before. Selfish. He didn't want to be part of the military anymore. Selfish. He didn't want to be part of the killing machine. Selfish. He didn't want to be part of the lie. Selfish. He didn't want to be part of damning others, vilifying them. Selfish. He just wanted out. Selfish. He wanted his freedom. Selfish. He wanted to have a clear conscience. He didn't ask anybody to go off and rescue him. He was leaving. They went off and tried to capture him, and they sacrificed what now is almost 20 lives trying to capture him. And now they sacrifice five detainees for his release. There's something really stinky. I mean, this is really, if you ever wanted a bad story, if you were president of the United States and wanted to have a story not associated with you, this is the one. The only way you can lead a story like this, and the president was out today even saying how proud he was and how it was the right thing to do. The only way you would have a story out like this is to be convinced that the average person was too dumb or too bored to understand it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the mythos of the Afghani war, this notion that America is fighting a war against terrorism, the notion that there are American interests in Afghanistan, that American servicemen are somehow protecting American freedom and keeping America safe because of their invasion in Afghanistan. But the Secretary of Defense, Hagel, said that he was hopeful that the prisoner exchange could lead to a breakthrough with the Taliban. Maybe this could provide some possible new bridge for new negotiations. That's a quote. So when I asked you, well, why did the administration do this, Glenn? I knew the answer. They admitted they did it because they wanted a bridge for new negotiations with the Taliban.
Wow, that's wonderful. Like, maybe he could have negotiated with Charles Manson, too. I mean, talk about naive, you know? I mean, oh, yes. And we're back to this old, frog and the scorpion thing. You know, why did you say me? It's in my nature. Come on.
It's in my nature. The U.S. has long argued that the best way to a successful outcome in Afghanistan. I mean, talk about naive. There is no successful outcome in Afghanistan. Included reconciliation with the Taliban. Reconciliation means you go off and you sing campfire songs together, that you're arm in arm, that, you know, why not recognize the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan? Why not provide them with U.S. aid? Why not exchange ambassadors? Why not do the things that we do with so many Muslim countries and provide them with bright, new, shiny weapons? Let's reconcile our relationship with the Taliban. After all, the last time we had a reconciled relationship, we were using the Taliban to go fight the Russians. Maybe we can redeploy the Taliban and re-equip them, and we'll go get them to fight Putin.
I'm just picturing Cabaret, Joel Grey. You know, and Hegel is Joel Grey. If you could see them through my eyes, they wouldn't be Muslim at all.
Yeah, let's reconcile our relationship. How do you talk to the mothers and the fathers and the wives and the sons of the 6,000 American servicemen and another 2,000 American civilians that lost their lives in the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq? And what you're trying to do is reconcile your relationship with the Taliban. They were among the, this is now the story of those that were released, they were among the Taliban's most influential commanders, five men whom the United States removed from the battlefield. One of the freedmen was the head of the Taliban's army. Another has been implicated by the United Nations for killing thousands of Shiite Muslims. Although the five men, this reminds me of your scorpion again, although the five men have each been in prison for at least a decade, many of them believe that, they still have significant influence within the Taliban because of their contribution during the group's formative years. The last time a high-level Taliban official was released from Guantanamo, that occurred in 2007. Then the detainee was Mullah Abdul Qayyum Zakir. He returned immediately to Afghanistan, and he took the reins of the organization's director of military operations. So we released him in 2007 with a promise. Now, promises from Muslims really work really well, too. From a promise that I won't go back to being a terrorist, and he immediately resumed his title as Director of Military Operations for the Taliban. Now, like Zakir, the five detainees that were released on Saturday and handed over to the Qatari government, which is a story all in itself, had formal government jobs when the Taliban ruled Afghanistan. They were politicians. They held civil service jobs, all of them. They were civil servants within the Taliban government. And yet now they're going to have a vacation in Qatar, 1 year in Qatar, with a promise that the Qatari emir is going to look out for them. The Taliban vowed as recently as last week that, quote, jihad is incumbent and our nation will continue its righteous jihad. Jihad is incumbent and our nation will continue its righteous jihad. Jihad is the stinger of the scorpion.
Right.
It's its means to life.
can one really be a civil servant when one is almost utterly lacking in civility?
And when serving is killing thousands of others, is that really service?
Right. It's absolutely crazy. One thing I wanted to point out about Berg, though, it doesn't sound like it doesn't. I'm not sure whether or not his objections to his deployment, like it's kind of like, oh well, man, like if this is a drag, I'm just going to go on vacation to the mountain. Or was he actually morally conflicted? Because in such cases, if a soldier or, you know, a member of the military goes to the chaplain, I happen to know of someone who ended up leaving Ranger School. I mean, he was naive, young guy, super fit and everything. Right. All wanted to be an airborne ranger. And actually, at the point of being in Ranger School, ended up going to the chaplain. This guy who clearly was not philosophically inclined at all. He was just, you know, brainwashed by the recruitment propaganda.
Right.
He found himself coming upon, you know, moral objections actually in Ranger School, approached the chaplain, and it was eventually discharged with, I believe, an honorable discharge because he managed to convince the chaplain and the shrinks and whomever he needed to convince that he had these, his misgivings were genuine. And in spite of this contractual obligations and oaths, he was released.
Yeah, they usually don't give you an honorable discharge, then they give you a discharge. But it's
they just give him a
neutral discharge. That one line, isolated from the context of everything that he said to others and what he wrote to his parents by email, would give you the out of context, the possibility of assuming, yeah, well, man, this could be really boring. So like, I'm going to take off and risk my life if the next deployment is boring. It's not a, it's not plausible out of context, and in context, it's impossible. Because he said, listen, what we're doing here is a pile of lies. It's reprehensible. It's disgusting. I don't want to be part of this horrible, embarrassing situation anymore.
Do you think he accurately weighed the implications of his decision before deciding, like you credited him with you having good judgment? Do you think I'm not sure this young, naive kid was capable of actually cogitating the implications of about what he was about to embark on when he left.
Well, all of his comments that he wrote to his parents suggest that he did.
He knew the risk he was taking. Okay, well,
yeah, I mean that's what his letters to his parents said, that he had a bout of conscience, that his conscience, his morality would not allow him to continue to promote the lies, to damn others, to promote what he knew was clearly wrong. He used those kinds of terms, and so he came to the conclusion that what America was doing and what he was being asked to do was wrong, counterproductive, and deadly. And he didn't want to be part of it anymore.
Okay,
it's why, by the way, he laid down his weapon before he walked away.
Now, if Pat Tillman's letters home were intercepted and he reaped the consequences permanently, I wonder, did that not happen to this guy? He wasn't bent on coming home to expose the whole thing. He was merely just disgruntled.
Yeah, you know what, Pat Tillman, I mean, I don't know how disgruntled Pat Tillman was. I mean, I know that Pat Tillman was... The issue with Pat Tillman, really, from my perspective, and you can fill me in where I'm lacking information, is that he bought into the propaganda that being in the army and fighting war and playing soldier was noble and heroic. So he bought into the propaganda, and he decided that he bought into the propaganda too, that Afghanistan was somehow responsible for 9/11, which it wasn't, and so he wanted to go off there and play warrior. And so he enlisted to go play warrior. He got over to Afghanistan, and while in Afghanistan, the U.S. was deploying our troops in a reckless fashion, and they were out pursuing the Taliban in an area where everyone was a Taliban supporter. Their Humvee broke down. And rather than stay with the vehicle and ask for airlift rescue or to someone else to come and supplement them and other vehicles to take them away, they split their the small group of men and decided they would walk out as separate groups. And when they were spotted and the Taliban attacked, one of our guys shot him, not knowing that he was one of our guys versus the Taliban. And that the bigger issue was that the U.S. government deliberately and knowingly promoted a lie, that the U.S. Military promoted the lie that this great hero was killed defending his country in enemy fire, when the government knew that he was killed by friendly fire.
Well, right, and not only that, Tillman, in his letters home, had declared his intentions to work against the war, and he had some small degree of notoriety left over because of his football, you know, fame, and you know that could have been considered a threat.
I was unaware of that. If you have a credible source that shows that Tillman's letters home were such that he wanted to expose the futility of the war in Afghanistan, I would love to see them. You know how to reach me.
Yeah, I heard it on Patriot Radio, so it must be true.
Great. Now, I would, before I'm going to go to the conspiracy, I mean, my concern on Tillman is A, he bought into the propaganda, and that's the purpose of propaganda. He was misled into the prevailing U.S. propaganda that being in the army and fighting war is heroic, and that they're providing a service to America. He bought into the lie. And that's my biggest issue. My second issue is the U.S. Department of Defense, knowing that he was killed by friendly fire, promoted a lie to keep the illusion alive that he was a hero. And so those are my primary issues. And then I have the other issue of the stupidity of the decision to split the force. Glenn, in the last segment, brought up Pat Tillman and the idea that he may have written the letters home protesting the war. There's a lot of websites that show Americans guarding poppy fields where opium and heroin are produced. And statements that he made in opposition to the American support for the reemergence of the drug culture in Afghanistan. And so what I'd like to do, Glenn, that is really most of the sites that present the conspiracy that Tillman was deliberately killed as opposed to killed by friendly fire are not credible. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that every site isn't credible. And so, maybe what I'd like to do is let's tackle this story one day, either later this week or next week, and I'll dig into it a little more. I'm not prepared to go beyond the two issues that I have three issues of total disgust regarding Tillman. I think Tillman, by the way, is related to the Bergdahl incident. And my issues are that he bought into propaganda, and that's what I'm trying to encourage people on this show, not to buy into this propaganda that it is heroic to be a soldier and that soldiers are defending American freedom and that we ought to go off to war to take it to the bad guys that want to kill us.
Well, I made that decision in 1979 after a year and a third of having my education paid for at an enormous state university by the Air Force. I left my scholarship, you know, offering to pay it back because, you know, I realized that I was a naive kid and I was enamored of the idea of the planes and the flying and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I remember one day when my colonel walked in and wrote the term vital interest on the board and, you know, asked people to define vital interest, and I defined it as, you know, something that one finds essential for life. And he defined it as something for which one was willing to die. And then I realized I wasn't on the same page.
Wow.
And I thought, yeah, this is, and I began to realize I was barking up the wrong tree. And
yeah.
So ends up walking.
Yeah, there was nothing in Afghanistan or in Iraq that was in the vital interest of America. Nothing.
Yeah.
And yet, I would define, based upon the military, vital interest, by the way, I would have defined it the same way you did. But from a military perspective, it's really not something for which someone is willing to die. It is something for which someone is willing to commit others to die.
Well, yeah, that's the George Patton line. It is to make the other poor dumb son of a bitch die for his
No. He's not talking about, in the military point of view, a vital interest, if it's determined that it's in the U.S. vital interest, they're willing to send you and me and others out to die.
Right.
And so it's what is worth sacrificing American lives? And a vital interest is defined as that which is worthy of sacrificing American lives. There was nothing in Afghanistan and nothing in Iraq that was worth sacrificing American lives. And
right.
So my issues with Tillman, just to conclude this, and I'm over this territory again and again, but the strategy that was deployed once their vehicle broke down was insane. It was just, you know, if that was the official U.S. policy, that we're not going to risk Jet A to send a helicopter in to pick them up, that we're not going to risk a little more gasoline to send in a Humvee to go pick them up, that we're going to have those guys split up and walk out of there when we deliberately sent them into territory where everybody in the territory hated us and wanted to kill us, that the officers who came up with that strategy should all be court-martialed. They should be accountable for the deaths of those there. And then when the military knew for certain that he had been killed by friendly fire, that there were three M16 bullets in his brain, and that they knowingly promoted the lie to his parents and to the world that he had died a war hero to be celebrated, and they maintain that with a deliberate stream of lies for 3 weeks, it tells you, you can't trust the U.S. military. When you sign up, you are completely theirs. They own you, and they will lie rather than tell the truth. And they will do it often and deliberately and knowingly, and they did it in the Tillman case. So even if we don't go to that next step, which I'm willing to explore, which is that he was deliberately killed, boy, this is enough to keep you out of the military. Should be.